a little bit about social media. I mentioned we produce the products both for traditional media, broadcast media, but also for our own purposes and how do we use it. So on the top left corner, you see the Maple Leaf, our paper, our newspaper. So a lot of the imagery went in the production into one of the editions there. Also social media, Facebook sites, Twitter. To be honest with you, the Canadian Forces has a number of media sites, social media sites, and we try very hard to try to coordinate that, to pass that message along, because we have so many platforms that it's difficult for the average person to know where to really look, because we have so many. So it's on our side to make sure that we coordinate and cross-pollinate, make sure that it's available everywhere. I mentioned one other thing on social media. I have bottom text here about, I'm talking about my team taking imagery, taking video, and pushing it out, but we got to think of the other side. We have a whole bunch of Canadian Forces members, 240, that also have iPhones, cameras, and taking pictures. So how do we manage that? We have a policy in place. Nothing restricts soldiers from doing that. We encourage them to do that. We want them to share the story, because simply a team of six can't do it all. But obviously, we need to do this in a way that's coordinated and doesn't compromise security. So we have direction in place on how to do that. And really, it's a lot easier to say to soldiers, this is what you got to be aware of, than saying, give me every single picture so I can verify. I don't have the resources to do it that way. Did we have issues? No, we didn't, so that worked out well. The policy works well as far as I'm concerned. We just have to get really specific into what is operational security, because it's not an excuse. It's not a blanket to be used to say no. And this is what I really find as a public affairs officer. You really have to get in the details to understand what exactly about this is operational security. And if it doesn't make sense, obviously you got to challenge it. Talk a little bit about measurements, social media effectiveness. So that tour recap video, within 2 weeks, it hit almost 30,000 views, and it's hovering around there right now. That nurse profile that you saw, within a week, it jumped pretty high. That was our best seller. The Christmas messages, we had a major that put out some Christmas messages. We did a whole bunch, but his particular one, I tracked the stats on that one, very well received with over 60,000. A photo story. What's a photo story? It's exactly what it sounds like. It's like reading an article, but take out the text and add a lot more pictures. And it's great for social media. It was a new thing that the Jordan team tried. I've never done it before, but it was very, very well received. And hometowners, which basically are writing an article, a soldier profile, a Canadian Forces member profile, and submitting it to local media for their consumption. Those work really, really well. We actually had one picked up. And it was retweeted by the city mayor in St. John's. So very positive coverage. So now let's switch gears and talk about Canadian media, traditional broadcast media. How was this story received? How was it presented? So I'm covering the timeline here from about the deployment, a little bit before. We deployed on the 30th of November, and it's going to 31st of January, where most of the members have returned. So overall, extensive media coverage. A breakdown in what format, so about 62 articles and 40 broadcast mentions, and both in French and English. Several points during that time, it was the lead story, it dominated the news cycle. The broadcasting overall, the reporting, I should say, very factual, no issues there. Tone, generally Canadian Forces support, we're in a support role, so positive tone. And there was obviously a few criticism, and the few criticisms, again, centered around about the accommodations and what's happening to soldiers and bases. And that continues to don't hear about it. Okay, how did I feel media interest on the ground? It was very manageable, I didn't feel that we were overwhelmed at all, but there was definitely, like in any story, it has a shelf life and there's peaks in it. The first flight of refugees going out, we had interest in that. When the IRCC minister came out for his visit, we tied that with the media day, so quite a bit of media interest on that particular day. December deadline, the first target that was set, I believe it was 10,000 by the 30th of December, and that was approaching, and numbers were keeping up. That brought in quite a bit of media interest. Not for Department of National Defense to respond to, it really was an IRCC response to provide. But nonetheless, that's when the media interest increased. And around Christmas, because again, it's a human interest story. Soldiers, members, and enforcement members are away from home. A lot of interest around Christmas. Again, human interest stories, hometowners, sitting down with just a regular Canadian Forces member, asking them about what they are, who they are, what they do, where they're from, submitting it back to the local media. It got quite a bit of interest. Most of the ones that I submitted, I was probably batting at about 60% of pickup, which in my view was quite good. So next I'll get into lessons learned for me. What did I take away from this tour? What I would like to pass along. Really, there's six lessons, I think, that I would like to share. The importance of establishing relationships, knowing who the communication players are, if they exist, in fact. Expecting hesitation when working in a whole-of-government environment. Preparing a plan, understanding the approval process, and then thinking outside the traditional toolbox of what we use. So, establishing relationships. Like I mentioned, there was eight federal departments. We were one of them. I give the analogy, I think, in this experience, when you're working with other departments, it's like meeting a cousin or a distant cousin. You know you're all part of the same family. You know you're all working together. You know you're all supposed to like each other, but you don't really know each other. So the importance of establishing that relationship and gaining that trust was very critical in order to move forward and actually have access to interviews, to locations. So a big part of my first week was really introducing, meeting people, introducing my team, and explaining our capabilities. Second one, I wanted to link in with everybody that was like me, a communicator, on the other side, from all the departments. And I learned the other departments didn't have a communications team in theater. Global Affairs Canada conducted their communications piece through the political advisor, but the other departments didn't have somebody like me or didn't have their own imagery assets. We were it. So that meant that if I wanted to coordinate with the other departments, I really had to coordinate with the operators who were very, very busy doing what they're supposed to be doing, the operation. I had to really know when to link in, how to link in, and be very efficient because their time was very precious. So really what I walked away from that was knowing not everybody's going to have a team like we do. So be prepared for that. One thing that really worked well in this particular case is that the head of the mission, the ambassador, was very interested in my team, very interested in the capabilities that we had, and she wanted to make sure that we were well supported. So we needed access to a location, for example, like getting out to a refugee camp. That was all coordinated through her political advisor. If not for her support and his support, it would be very, very difficult for me to make that happen. Expecting hesitation. So this goes back to going into theater, realizing that there might not be other communicated from other departments. So we ran across the issue of first making people understand we're not media, and something that perhaps made it a little bit more difficult is we weren't often in uniform, and that was a force protection measure. So sometimes you see us in uniform, like this is my videographer, and he's not in uniform here, because we're transiting between many locations, and we're keeping a low profile. Again, we're in a support role there, so being in civilian clothing, that was common for us. But when you're introducing yourself to another department and you're not in uniform, but you have cameras, automatically people get a little bit concerned on what's going on. So it was an education piece. First I met people, then it was the education piece that we're not media. Then once we were able to introduce ourselves and talk about our capabilities, what I found out is at the tactical level on the ground, the operators weren't comfortable that they had the permission to actually conduct interviews, to participate fully. They wanted to go back up their chain of commands, respective chain of commands, to get that approval, to seek that approval. Which was interesting to me because when I left Canada, it was made clear to me that that cross-departmental coordination had happened. Right, yes. So, and I'm sure it did in Canada, but how did it filter down? On the ground, I felt that obviously it hadn't, not as fast as one would have expected to, or maybe hoped for. Okay, so what did that really mean on the ground? It meant delays. And then you throw on top of that a 7-hour delay back were working in a different time zone, it just meant delays. And I think that was a big lesson for me,